time. Hi, everybody. This is Dean Haglin from the Office of Rational Exuberance here in the heart of the historic core of downtown Los Angeles, in the middle of the Art Deco wonder known as the Eastern Columbia Building. This is your Chilpack Hollywood Hour, and I'm here with my co-host, as always, Mr. Ocho Cinco, Phil Lernes.
How can I be here on this Monday, December 20th, when I'm still just putting up last week's show?
I don't know. Or how can I be here when technically I'm driving across a frozen tundra?
Where are you actually right now?
Technically, I would probably...
You left last Tuesday before last Tuesday. The sun came up?
Yes. He's staying at the ice hotel.
it's all ice hotel up there.
And who's that?
Who's that?
That we have so many questions.
Oh, yes.
People just, yeah, because they hear another voice.
Another voice. It's our second time guest.
Second time guest.
Happy to be back.
Happy to be back, Mr. Chris Mancini.
Thank you, guys.
Host of his own podcast.
Yes.
ComedyFilmNerds.com.
Which is a website.
No, the website is
comedyfilmnerds.com.
But the podcast
is Comedy Film Nerds, yes.
With no .com.
Okay, well, where do people find the podcast, Comedy Film
They
Nerds?
Can find it at comedyfilmnerds.com or through iTunes or any kind of RSS feed.
If they go, but we want people to go to the Comedy Film Nerds website because
it is more, and
we should talk about this. It's much more than just the podcast.
Absolutely.
And can they subscribe? Like if they come to our website, chillpackhollywood.com, they can not only find, first of all, they can find all the old episodes. Can people do that at Comedy Film Nerds?
They sure can. We have a podcast player embedded in the site, so you can actually get old episodes. You could just stream if you want, or you could subscribe any way you want. Like some people hate iTunes. We've gotten emails about people how much they hate iTunes.
Really?
Like, okay, it's free. If you want to hate it, that's fine.
But it's only you only get 25 episodes.
They only put up like the most recent 25 links. That's the thing, you know. On iTunes, they'll tend to
archive a little more.
But if they can find all the older ones,
you can get all of them. Just to look at the RSS feed, and then we also have an app for iPhone and Droid, and they can get all the episodes through there as well.
What about my BlackBerry Torch?
That's coming, but that's a little spoiler alert. That's secret.
Ooh.
Yeah, BlackBerry Rim is coming for Comedy Film Nerds, but not here yet.
Because I walked in, first thing I said when I was getting my new phone was, it can't be an iPhone.
I got one.
I need the actual keypad.
You have very, very fat thumbs. So you need a keypad.
It's what initially attracted you to me. What?
I'm looking for a co-host with fat thumbs. That was my Craigslist ad.
Someone who looks like a bad carpenter.
But you mean P-H-A-T thumbs.
That's right.
That's what you...
I think
it's possible that this is our worst opening ever.
No, I disagree.
I've been on here before.
Ow! That was me.
So they can. That's great. So we want people to go to comedyfilmnerds.com. And when you go to comedyfilmnerds.com, the first thing that one sees is that there's a lot of different things to explore.
That's right.
Indeed.
We
have a lot of movie reviews. Dean Haglin writing some fantastic movie reviews. That will be up today after I get home. I've been too busy filling Chilpack orders.
You mean it'll
to actually
be up,
post the article?
you mean it will have been up for a week?
It will have been
no.
up for a yeah, week. That's what week. I meant because I'm a time traveler.
You all have, everybody has to
everyone
at the holidays, especially if you're a parent. You have to be a time traveler.
Everyone thinks time is so linear.
Right,
you know,
not.
Please.
please, watch your sci-fi.
Yeah,
you know
it's not linear. It's time, space, no linear.
Republican,
Democrat, no, it's a world beyond that.
Comedy Film Nerds also sells chill packs.
We do indeed, and we've been selling them through the roof. It's actually one of our biggest sellers.
Is that right?
That and Doug Benson CDs are our two biggest sellers.
Wow, I'm honored, actually.
Yes.
Does Doug Benson know this?
He does.
That he's selling the same rate as chill packs.
Yeah.
It's either I get a cool mic computer or have a laugh.
Right.
Doug Benson's.
While I'm stoned.
Does Doug Benson also offer free shipping through the holidays?
Doug Benson doesn't offer a lot. But
through the holiday, and we mentioned this because Chilpack is our sponsor.
Yep.
Chilpack through the holidays, free shipping anywhere in the world. The price is $19.95, and it is a great Christmas gift. I've given it as a gift before.
We
it, of course,
right
uh,
yeah.
takes your laptop computer, keeps it running fast.
We use one every time we do a podcast. You have to. It keeps the fan off, and it keeps the computer cool, and it helps actually edit the episode. Anything that uses a lot of CPU power, the Chill Pack takes care of it, especially on older laptops.
Right.
It's a huge help. But
and you know what I've found? Sometimes when I'm in the process of things and I don't want to get up and switch it out because I don't want to break the train of it, you know, even... You know, like you've said, the Chill Pack keeps it cool for anywhere from 1 to 3 hours.
Yeah.
But even if you don't have the chance to go switch it out, just the Chill Pack under there, even the one that you've been using for a few hours,
it's still preferable to nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. It still Absolutely. Helps.
But to answer your question about free shipping, we are not doing free shipping, but...
At Comedy Film Nerds.
At Comedy Film Nerds.
Chillpack.com.
But at chillpack.com, our listeners should go to chillpack.com, chillpack.com.
What we will do is any order that comes in up to December 20th, we will, even if you do standard shipping, we'll priority mail it. So you get it for Christmas. So, if you want a Doug Benson CD and a Chill Pack together, you'll get it in time for Christmas.
Now, what's Doug Benson's new show coming out on Comedy Central?
The Benson Interruption. It's already on.
What is that?
What it is Doug invites a lot of his friends to do stand-up on the show, and then he interrupts them as they're performing.
So he's the heckler.
Pretty much, but on stage with the comedians.
So he's the on-stage heckler.
Yes.
And he just stops the act going... What you're not?
Yes,
you don't
yes.
live in a basement suite. Why are you doing jokes about a basement suite? Does he do that sort of thing?
Yeah, it's that kind of interruption. It's actually really funny. They've been doing it at Largo for years, and it picked up. I think there was only 6 episodes in the season. I don't know if they're going to do another one or not.
Right. Wow.
But it's good. You should check it out on Comedy Central.
Now, Chris, awesome. The last time you were here, I was not here.
That's right.
And you were here talking about your book.
I was. Yes, and
Pacify
that is
me.
Also a great Christmas present. Isn't that weird? The way that works out for a new dad.
And what's the name of that?
It's called Pacify Me: A Handbook for the Freak Out New Dad. It tells the real story about how guys really feel about being dads, and it pretty much, when you got a new dad, we freak out about it. We're very nervous, and this book will talk you off the ledge in a funny, informative way.
Now, do you actually read your own book when you're freaking out as a new dad?
You know what's weird? I actually kind of look back and I'm like, did I talk about this? I'm like, I must have put this in. And like,
now,
oh,
you were on Chill Pack Hollywood Hour number 103. I'm sure you remember that.
Yes,
on May 4th, 2009. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think the book had just come out.
It just dropped. This was actually my first interview that I had done when the book dropped.
Yep. And this was your first book, right?
First book, yes.
And so what in the, I guess, year and a half since then.
Wow, it's been that long.
What have you learned through the process of selling the book and through how it sold that maybe you're really pleased that you did write, and what might you have done differently?
It's amazing. The thing that makes it amazing is that not only are there things you're learning, but the entire marketplace and just the atmosphere and the landscape is changing at the same time you're learning. So it actually makes it harder because bookstores are closing. You know,
right.
Kindles are doing well. There's digital e-books and... So the old school thinking was like, oh, well, you got to get on like the Today Show to sell your book. And the truth is, no, you don't. I mean, your audience, especially for a younger audience, new dads and guys raised on pop culture, they're not watching the Today Show.
Yeah.
They're listening to podcasts. They're on the internet. And most of my sales have been through Amazon and, of course, comedyfilmnerds.com, where you could get a signed and personalized copy of the book. But the old school and the agents and publishers are finally coming around to that. It's like, hey, you know what? It's more about viral marketing and the internet and hitting your audience. I mean,
so were they with Amazon? You put your book up and just say book's already, or did your publisher?
Publisher, because it was Simon and Schuster, so it went everywhere.
Right. You know, for those who haven't listened to episode 103,
right?
You actually got a publisher. You got an old school publisher.
Old school publisher. Yes.
So this is like a brick and mortar. You didn't go to Hulu or Lulu and print it yourself.
No. This was the real deal. It went all over the world and. But
how many languages?
One, English.
Oh, you didn't see the Russian.
Yeah, but I didn't see the German
version. Did
you
write it originally in
English? Yeah, I did. Originally in English with a
written
little...
Written in English, translated into English.
Yes. I was trying to get them to do an Esperanto version, but they wouldn't do it.
But Shatner wouldn't do the book on tape.
He had the rights. So oh, that would be great, an Esperanto version, have him read it.
Oh, wouldn't
that would have been awesome.
Totally.
All
I
right.
bet you could get him
He might still, he might still be interested.
That's awesome.
Hell, we can just find that movie
right.
that he did on on YouTube,
Incubus?
And we can just cut it.
Yeah. Put it together. It sounds like it. The universal language that no one wants to listen to. So it's really interesting, and it's all about blogs and podcasts, and really to market your book properly. I mean, there's old school stuff. Like if you're targeting an older audience, or if it's a political book, yeah, then you go on all the shows that nobody our age is watching.
Right. Right. Because I know Daily the most Show part. Always has some guy on a political book there, right?
Right.
Like, that's always... And I'm like, wow, do these sell the books? Because it seemed, you know, it's like an aging general.
Old school thinking, yeah, they used to. Like, you go on those shows, it was like a big thing. Now, there are, of course, exceptions. You get on Oprah or one of those shows, then you're an instant bestseller.
Right.
But there are few and far between now. It's really, you build your own audience, just like podcasting.
Yeah.
And then they buy your merch as it is. You know,
as it were.
Book. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So wow. it's good and it's bad. It's good that it levels the playing field. Like, you don't need a high-priced publicist to get you on a show or whatever when you can actually get to your audience. As you guys have found out, we've all have through podcasts. You can get to your audience right through the internet. If someone has a computer, they can find you.
Right. That's the handy thing.
Right. Yeah.
And so anybody...
And if they have a computer and a chill pack, they can find you faster.
And for a longer period of time. Without having to buy a new computer.
Right. Absolutely.
No, I think that this is really interesting, too, because what you're describing also, it's not only the way of things, it will increasingly be the way of things, not just in terms of, okay, technology is constantly changing and all this, but because as we all age, so too does the demographics change with it.
I mean,
like, I've been looking at the demographic breakdowns for, you know, who listens to this show. And one of the things was, you know, our smallest demographic group when we first started was people over 55.
Right.
And now we're up to 7% of our audience is people over 55. And the thing is that they may have been under 55 when we started the show. Right? Yeah. And because at some point we may be over 55 doing the show.
Right. Oh, and you'll still know how to use a computer. You'll still, you know, it's the technology will grow with you.
I'll know how to use it better.
Right.
I would like to think I get better at my computer skills.
I don't know. Or at the very least, everything is new again because, you know, every day you have to wake up and learn it again. Yeah, look what I learned how to
that's
do.
When you,
email.
That's when you bring in like a 24-year-old intern
who knows
the new operating systems.
Exactly.
And,
oh my gosh.
And don't forget, most importantly, fat thumbs.
Right.
See what happened? I know. It's so true because, you know, I had
for
my
extra
first
texting.
My first website, 1995, hand-coded HTML. I was like on the cutting edge.
It must have taken you hours and hours and hours and hours.
A couple hours for sure, but it wasn't a very fancy site. It was more,
right.
It was the early days before it was even called blogging. I would just my title page would be me, and then the second page would just be whatever I was doing in Hollywood or traveling around, and I would code that and be this really cool site. And I even had people go, "Hey, welcome to the internet!" Like people in like welcoming me, like it was that early. And I even had somebody going, "Oh, AOL comes online tomorrow. Goodbye, everyone. This has been really fun. This our little community that we had, but now they're going to open it to the mass public."
Oh, hilarious!
Like that's how far back I go.
Wow, like CompuServe days.
Like my CompuServe email address was 1031.
Right, just numbers.
.327. Yeah, mm-hmm. They couldn't even put a name to it.
Yeah, Prodigy. Remember Prodigy?
Yes, I met the president of Prodigy. Said, "Oh man, hey, love your
Where,
show."
Where in an alley?
Yeah.
Oh, this was back then.
That's when he actually was on top of it. Yeah. Yeah, no. And so now my skills are completely useless online. So sad.
You know, we were talking a little bit, I guess it was after our show last week, about how, you know, we made this documentary and we're in post-production on it right now. And it's really interesting. People are lovely and always have suggestions. You know what film festival you should take it to, and you know
of
what
course.
You should do. You know,
yes.
Everybody has it, but what is so interesting is how many of these people, you know, actually don't make movies. You know, anybody right. who wants to make movies has advice for you
sure.
on what you should do. And yeah. at some point, you know, you say, of course, thank you. And there's the voice inside that says, you know, if these were good ideas, you'd be making a movie, right? And then when we were talking about this, we said, and oh my God, what about like parenting? Like,
oh my
the
God.
People
yeah.
love giving parenting advice, especially people who have no kids.
Yes. Yeah, that actually I address in the book where whenever your wife's pregnant or you're about to have a baby, everyone becomes an expert giving you advice from the mailman to the guy giving you, you know, your change at the beer store.
Oh, my God.
And so I want to know now after the book being out, you know, what was the reaction from readers? I mean, did you, I mean, from other parents, did they thank you for it? Did they go, oh, this
absolutely.
Is way off?
It was a mix. It was 90% positive, though. It was a lot of guys emailed me saying, look, you know, there was no books out there that really kind of helped me what I was going through, being freaked out about being a father. Because guys, we don't talk about stuff like that.
No.
Women talk about their feelings. Men don't. Right. Otherwise, we would be women. So you can't
works?
Do that. So a lot of guys emailed me and said, look, this really helped me through a difficult time. Now I'm really looking forward to being, you know, a dad. Because the first thought into a guy's mind when they're about to have a baby is my life is over.
Right.
And it's not over. It just changes. And if it doesn't change, you're doing it wrong. So,
right. So, you can't go out party every night.
But so, yeah. So it's the kind of thing where that big fear about guys is, you know, I put that into paper because that's how I felt. And I read a bunch of books. I'm like, oh, these don't help me. This isn't funny. This is written for women. And I wanted to do it in a funny way to kind of, you know, calm guys down, and that I did it. And then there's always the couple of really, you know, angry women that write, you know.
Well, this is what I'm going to go. What is there a tenor to that other 10%?
Which I find hilarious is because it's very rare that a target audience is in the title of a book. A handbook for the freaked out new dad.
Right.
And now, if you're a woman reading this that, you know, is into all these other crazy, like, attachment parenting and all these, like, fads and stuff, that, and you don't have a sense of humor, you're probably not going to like the book. It's not for you.
Uh-huh.
And I like a couple of them said, like, oh, I'm glad my husband doesn't think like this or not like this. Well, he probably does. He's just keeping his mouth shut because you're such a shrew. So,
ow.
It's really.
That's
it's,
how you reply.
I don't reply. I'm above the fray. but mostly it's women who buy the books for their husbands or boyfriends. And I get a lot of emails from women too saying they read it first and thought it was hilarious. So,
right.
You know, here's the thing about humor. If you're secure in yourself, you can laugh at yourself. And that's what it is. It's really about laughing about our fears and what. You know, what's coming and, you know, having fun with it. And, you know, but if you're insecure about yourself and your husband or your parenting, you're not going to find it as funny.
Well, and right. I would think that it's also even more than whether I find it funny or not, just the lighthearted approach to the material is what's so important.
Yes.
Because, again, it's the tone of the piece that can help just right there. People calm down and go, okay, I'm a little less freaked out.
Exactly. And that was my main goal, and that, you know, I'm happy to say it seems to have been, you know, mission accomplished from what the response I've been getting.
So awesome. Then now why I bring up this idea of, you know, the mm-hmm. people who don't do these things, don't make movies or don't have children offering advice. What about reviewers? Now, you know, were people who reviewed the books, were they automatically parents? Were they automatically men? Were they, or...
Literary scholars?
That's what's interesting about it. It was, I think I got, actually, for the professional reviewers, all positive reviews. I didn't get one bad professional review.
Awesome.
And I was looking at the reviewers, and it was a
did
mix.
Did they consider the target audience in the review?
They absolutely did. Yeah, they right. absolutely did. And some of the reviewers are like... websites and magazines devoted to dads, but a lot of them, you know, weren't. Like, you know, Library Journal loved it. They said it was one of the best fatherhood books written since Bill Cosby.
Great. Oh, great.
So it was, and I'm looking at all these reviews. I'm like, okay, yeah, this is really cool. And you know, it's funny as writers, as you guys know, it's like, you know, there was a writer, I can't remember the name. She said that you know, you skip over all your good reviews and memorize the bad one.
Yeah,
you know, because that's just our psyche.
Yeah.
You know, but
also you're at, you know, in part of it though, you're also apt to learn more from criticism than you
sure,
are from
sure.
anything else.
Like it was on the cover of like the Sacramento Book Review for Father's Day, so it was it got some really nice press and real positive reviews, and it's selling, and that's the important thing because. Books don't sell as much anymore. I don't
right.
know if you guys know this, but and this is a crazy statistic. You guys won't even believe it. I didn't believe it. My agent told me. They said 93% of books never sell more than 1,000 copies.
Wow.
Like of books ever written. So
what? Yeah,
isn't that crazy? Because people just don't read as much anymore. And
does that mean they're taking it out of the library or they're just...
It could be, or they're just, you know, with all TVs and 1,000 channels and stuff, people just aren't reading, which is but really sad.
70% of those were written by L. Ron Hubbard after his death.
Exactly.
No, that's true, because when we did a loft tour here, we go to see other people's place. Everybody comes to our place to go, hey, you got bookshelves. Yeah. Like, they're, like, surprised, like all the other places.
So but, what I can do is I spin them, like, I'm the top 7% of authors.
Congratulations.
With Dan Brown and, yeah.
Yeah. That's you.
And Stephanie Meyer.
Wow, that's a shocking statistic.
Yeah, and I think bookstores are going to start to go away, too, which is unfortunate. Like, Borders are closing, as you guys know. Barnes & Noble's are closing, but... The good thing is, for the indie bookstores, they're doing great.
Those
indie
are doing great.
Are
yeah.
Doing great. It's the big corporate behemoths that, like, you know, your book goes into a bookstore for literally, like, 6 weeks to 2 months, and if it doesn't sell like gangbusters, it gets pulled, and then you can only buy it online.
Wow.
Or you special order it. Yeah. So I'm not even in a lot of bookstores anymore, but it doesn't matter. My audience isn't in bookstores.
Right.
You know, they're like, we're online. And so it's buying it online.
But if I want to, like, I'll go into my independent bookstore that does very, very well in Los Feliz. Yeah. And
you can order it.
They
no
will
problem.
Order
yep,
it.
Yep.
No problem.
It'll come up on the database and you'll have it in a couple of days. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's so cool. Mm-hmm. I am just shocked, though, that it's 93%.
It's amazing. Yeah. I had to verify that. I'm like, are you sure?
But what about, so does that mean then everybody's getting it on Kindle and the ebooks now?
No, it just means that less people are buying books. Yeah.
Well,
like the threshold for a successful book is lower. Like if you sell 10,000 copies of a book, that's like a big success.
Why? So there is no audio version of the book, is there?
There's not an audio version, but I have, there's Kindle and I believe whatever the other versions are, Nook and Sony,
PDFs.
And the Apple one too, iBooks.
Why don't you record an audio version?
I was thinking of doing that actually.
I think you should.
We're recording right now. Let's do it right now.
Yeah, I got your book over there in the bookshelf.
We got another 38 minutes.
Yeah.
Just hit us the highlights.
I just read the first word of every page.
I'll bring up topics and you give us advice.
Shoot. Bedwetting, go.
Yep. Moils.
Hilarious. Wow. I'm still staggered. I'm sad.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I don't know how much of this you got into when Chris was on the show before.
None of
but,
it. Went off on a tangent.
The two of you know each other from stand-up?
Yes.
When we did his show at a bookstore.
At a bookstore, a bookstore that is now closed. That Borders book was really sad. I actually drove by it, and it's all gutted, and it's dark.
Where is that?
It was right across from the Beverly Center, that huge Borders on
La Cienega.
On La Cienega, yeah. I'm like, this one will never close. It's huge.
You know where the split to San Vicente? Like, that was like a two-story bookstore.
But that whole mall, there was also the General Cinema theaters there.
Stuff.
It's all
gone.
No, not the mall. It was separate.
But there were cinemas there, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was too bad because I look at it like it was a really cool scene. At some point, you know, for our stand-up shows, we'd get like 60, 80 people in a bookstore, packed. And they were buying books. I'm like, this is good for the store.
Yeah. It was really interesting because we went through this place where, you know, bookstores then suddenly were doing so well that they expanded, and now we're selling. We have a whole floor dedicated to music, and now we have a whole floor dedicated to video, and now we've got our own, like, Seattle's Best Coffee or whatever
they
it is.
Computer games even
at
one point.
They expanded before. It was like the Big Bang, then the big collapse.
Hey, you know what? Sell books.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You could see the deterioration, especially with the live events, pretty quickly. Like, each store used to have, like, a person who their only job was to book live events. They were like the community organizers. So they would fill the calendar with authors, musicians, and anybody, you know, performances, comedy. And then all of a sudden they got fired. And then there was like one person for like two or three stores that would book stuff. And then there were less events. And then there's like, you know, there's probably one person for Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Now it just got less and less and less. And then you look at the calendar events and it's empty. You know, like once a month, there'll be an author coming in, and that's it.
But you know, one of the great things, and I know that it's sad, and from a financial standpoint, of course, the idea of, you know, it's like, you know, if you're selling 10,000 copies, you're ahead of the game, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, 10,000 copies, you know, not to be corny, but can change the world. I mean, when you think about how many books you will pick up at in your life that very copy's been read by so many other people.
That's true.
Like, I love trolling used bookstores for the books where people have signed them who owned them. Like, because I like getting copies that have a history and I can read the history of where this copy
like
was.
A library book or something like that. You signed it out.
Used to be traditional, too, as a gift when you gift it. And so I'll always inscribe every book.
Yeah, right.
as
kids' books, especially. There's always a name in a kid's book.
To Joey.
Right. For your birthday.
Hello, Grandpa.
But, and so, you know, 10,000 copies, you know, get that into circulation, purchased, and that will find its way around, especially if it's something I would think like this, where, you know what? This was of value to me when I was becoming a new father, I would like you to have it because you're about to become a new father.
Right.
All right.
And yep. then Passed and then they down. Tell two the, friends.
There's actually a word for that in the publishing industry. It's called giftable. It's like, well, your book's giftable. That means people, if they like it, they give it to somebody else for, you know, the same occasion.
But so it's got to feel good cool. yeah. at some point, because we all will work on projects that maybe get a bigger audience and some will have smaller. And it's so easy to judge it on the basis of, okay, what were the numbers? What did I get out of it monetarily? Mm-hmm. All these things. But you know that no matter how many copies that you sell of this book, the value of it is beyond that.
Absolutely.
It's beyond the number. More people will be helped by the book than ever read the book, just within that family alone, right?
Yeah,
because if only the father reads it, well, still, his wife is helped by it, the kids are helped by
no
it, and all
question.
These
exactly.
things.
Yeah.
And that's got to feel good, because I don't think that's a very common experience for anyone in a creative endeavor to be able to know.
Other than our podcasts.
Yeah, it's helping a lot
of
people.
Right, that's true, because we say these brilliant things, and then people on their own make T-shirts out of those phrases and sell them around the world and make a lot of money off the witticisms we say.
Them and Cafe Press make a fortune.
Damn them.
And we're just glad to be a part of that.
Yeah. You know, I'm just glad to spread the mirth.
You know, we just
like the Grateful Dead. So they tape your shows. What's the big deal?
Exactly.
We sing for our supper.
You tour live.
It would be ungrateful to be paid for everything we eat.
I got nothing. You're bitter.
So you met as stand-up comics.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you still do stand-up, too.
Occasionally, yes. I don't do as much as I used to, but next month in the January, I'll be in Tahoe, and then I'll actually do a couple nights in Palm Springs in February. So
what now, rooms
keep,
in Palm Springs?
Keep my foot in it. There's a casino called Fantasy Springs.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a Friday, Saturday, I believe.
Who books that?
That's the Improv.
That's an Improv.
But it's seasonal. It's like literally like 3 months, and then that's it.
Oh.
Now, I'm wondering, and maybe there is no connection to this at all, but I know that you make short films.
Yes.
And I have many other friends who have been stand-ups, and then they get really into making short films. How has the short film, especially in the age of the internet and viral videos and all this, how has short films changed stand-up? Because it seems like a lot of people get the bug to make these films, and then they do less of the live performing.
It's actually changed it in a number of different ways. Some good, some not so good.
Oh.
one of the ways it's not as good is if you have a stand-up who's only been doing it a couple months, but they get this crazy YouTube video that gets a million hits,
right.
Then all of a sudden they're a headliner. And then people go to see them because they can draw. They can bring people in because they've saw on their crazy video. And then as a stand-up, as the artist stand-up, they're just not ready to headline a room. They don't have the time or they don't have the experience.
Wait a sec. I can headline off a million hit YouTube
videos? Absolutely you can. Yeah, it's happening all the time. You know?
What?
Yeah. It's.
I thought I still needed a cable show.
No. See, old school thinking.
My God.
The cable shows are looking to YouTube for their next shows. I mean, there's you know, these kids, there's guys making, the kids making $100,000 a year just on goofy YouTube videos they're shooting in their house. So it's a whole new channel, really. YouTube is a whole other thing.
Am I wrong in thinking that that's how Zach Galifianakis and Dane Cook, that these guys were really created by MySpace?
Not really videos, more viral marketing.
Yeah, really connected to his AOL chat room, too.
Right. But then that was how he proved.
But Zach was more of a slow burn, where he did a lot of stuff, like VH1 and all different things.
Yeah, I saw him perform years and years, like when it first came to town.
But I mean, in terms of this being able to prove yourself as a draw, which therefore...
Well, that's the problem. It's like, you don't have to. You just prove yourself as a draw. You don't have to prove yourself as a performer.
Right.
That's where the disconnect it comes in. Now, if you're talented, you can overcome that in like a couple of years, where then you can become a solid stand-up. But the best way to do it is become a solid stand-up first, you know, get your audience, and then if you make a crazy video and you have a million hits, you're ready. You can play stadiums and arenas because you have the experience to do that.
But then how about for someone who has been a stand-up comic and has established themselves, do you ever find that, you know, you'll come up with a concept, come up with a routine, an idea, whatever, that you then think, oh, you know what, I'd have more fun exploring this as a short film and then you don't end up exploring it as material to perform live.
And that's fine, because they should be two separate things. Like, if it's something that can be explored as a short film, that's where it should live. If it's it's something that can be explored as both, it's not fully developed.
Right.
It's either a bit or it's a short film. And the good thing is it's immediate now. Anyone can make short films and sketches and stuff, but, I mean, the people aren't really making short films as much anymore, you know, on film or high def with stories applied. It's more just instant gratification YouTube viral stuff.
To shoot it in your house.
Because that can get you farther quicker. Is, you know, because that's how you get it. It's just about hits and numbers, you know, just like everything else. The good news is that you don't. There's no gatekeepers,
right?
You know, there's no one saying, "Oh, this we can't put this on YouTube." No, no, that doesn't exist.
Right. Yeah, there's no, you know, cancellation.
Yeah, yeah, no one gets canceled on the internet.
Yeah, right.
So you you can put it up. If you get the hits, then all of a sudden you have the clout that you didn't have before. Like, you know, podcast numbers are another thing. You can get advertisers, but here's the awesome end game of this. You get to the point where you don't need people coming to you with offers. I'm like, well, no, I'm doing fine. I have my own podcast, my business, advertisers, Adam Carolla, Mark Maron, Jimmy Pardo. They're getting money right from sponsors or their audience.
Just
you know,
that.
They don't need a cable channel to come in and say, hey, you know, we're going to give you a show and then own it and then fire you. You know, it's
yeah,
you don't
need
that.
But before we fire you, we're going to do everything we can to turn you into someone you're not.
Right. Exactly. And then we're going to blame you for it.
Right.
For
it's
not doing
it's shopping for the house. It's lovely. Yeah. It's beautiful. We're changing everything.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Now tear it down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Well, isn't that why... the guy in Comedy Central who went to South Africa when he freaked out at the 50.
Tom Green.
Oh, no. close, different freak out.
Tom Green's on the internet. He's
Dave Chappelle.
Dave Chappelle.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That was the whole thing. That he had like all of this huge success,
right?
But then it came with all of this weight of tearing it down and all that sort of thing.
And baggage. And he's baggage, like, I'm not doing it. And he walked away. Yeah, he sure
now,
did.
Does he have a podcast now? What's he doing?
I don't know.
No, recently I just read something that he had started to do something and then he quit, and it's more or less like he did what he wanted to do.
Yeah, I guess so, right?
You know, imagine that. I mean, I was thinking about actually, oh man, I feel so bad. Who's the guy in the Chris Tucker?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, right, right.
Do you realize how few movies Chris Tucker did? I mean, this last decade, he did three. He did the three Rush Hour movies.
That
and
was
he
it.
Became so big, so fast.
Fifth Element.
Fifth Element was his breakthrough.
That was his breakthrough one.
What was the
yeah.
one with Charlie Sheen that Brett Ratner directed that was a big hit, a big unexpected hit?
Yeah, after that.
And then the only other one is Jackie Brown that I can think of.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, here's a handful of movies. And I keep thinking, I mean, he gets $25 million a movie.
Might be a choice.
Why isn't he working more? And then it's like, oh yeah, right, $25 million a movie.
Right.
He actually doesn't have to.
Doesn't have to. Yeah.
Hello, memo to Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
You don't need the money.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's true, right?
And I compare Harrison Ford to Chris Tucker because to me their whole act is the same. It's just them shouting at the top of their lungs.
Right. As high as a kite.
Regarding Chris Tucker.
That's right. Oh my God, it's true. Wow. So this sort of blows my mind now. I didn't realize the stand-up world had been so affected by YouTube hits.
Yes.
My last time doing the clubs, because I went to the conventions. So.
And you know who hates that is the club owners.
Why?
Yeah, because they get the initial hit at first. Like, you know, people come into the club, but they're only there to see that person. The other people that are there just to see a show and see a bad show, they're not going to come back.
Oh, right.
So you're
turning away potential regular customers.
Right, exactly. Just to feed that one flash in the pan show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But this also then is how the comedy world was decimated in the early 90s with the busting out of all those comedy shows, A&E's Comedy on the Road.
Yes.
Where it was
oversaturated.
Oversaturation. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just, it used to be the idea that you work really hard, you get to television. Then it was any guy who had 5 minutes can get up in front of the brick wall and be on A&E's Comedy on the Road.
Right.
And then everybody went, yeah, I'd go to a comedy club, but I've seen it on TV and it sucks.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's going to suck even worse at the
club. Or it's free on TV. Why would I go and pay for it?
But either way.
Well, that's why, you know, getting back to the bookstore, and you know, as an analogy, I mean, we saw that in the 80s, didn't we, that there was this explosion of comedy clubs.
Yeah.
That were built. I mean, there were so many comedy clubs.
All the rock
clubs. And then fairly rapidly we saw the shrinkage.
And then every bar had a comedy night, like on Wednesday. When I was in college... you know, all my friends had part-time jobs. I was doing stand-up, making twice as much, working a couple hours a week.
Yeah.
You know,
remember that?
It's so fascinating reading Steve Martin's Born Standing Up book. And, you know, when he was honing his act, you know, he's in San Francisco. He's in Orange County. He's in populated places. And, no, he's got to go to the folk night at some local coffee shop.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Folk music night. That's the only place where he could get a few minutes. And, you know, he did the banjo, and then he could do some jokes because there just weren't comedy nights.
Yeah, I know, and that all changed.
That's amazing.
And then it wrecked it, and now it's sort of evened out.
It's evened out, and it's, if anything, it's coming back to the point where, you know,
they're saturated.
I hope not, but maybe.
But, Chris, let's talk a little bit about your short films.
Yeah.
Now,
yes.
When you make these, are they for online viewing? Do you make them to submit to festivals?
I actually haven't made a couple in a couple of years, but the ones I have made, they were like full short films where they weren't sketches, they weren't meant to be YouTubes, they were meant to be, you know, stories downloaded. And, you know, I shot one, Hit Clown, on a 35mm black and white film. It's a 13-minute film with no dialogue about a hitman and a clown who switch bag and find they like the other's job better. And, you know, I watched it recently again.
Wait a
and
minute, there's a difference between those jobs?
Not really.
Not really.
And I watched this movie, you know, and a couple of years later, and I'm looking like, I can't believe I ever got this movie made. I did, when you hear that all the stuff that people tell you to make short films, I did everything wrong. I had a 35mm black and white film. I had a huge cast. I had a ton of locations. I had kids. I had squibs, special effects.
Oh my
all
God.
These things. I'm like, oh my God, how would we get this done? And that was the short film that got me the most meetings.
Yeah.
Because it showed I could direct. It showed I could make a film on a budget, but it showed I could make a big movie.
And where did that get shown?
Got shown in festivals, and then it's on my DVD. Like, my DVD got picked. I made as hard as it's been to make a feature film, I made enough short films to actually equal a feature to get on one DVD. Right. I made, there's like six on the DVD.
And so is that how people can see your films?
Yes.
That was on the DVD?
It's on Netflix, called Myopic Visions, and it's also for sale Amazon and, of course, comedyfilmnerds.com. But
right.
It's definitely out. It's kind of cool where it really shows a progression. Like, I don't know if I meant it that way, but because I would do a ambitious short film every couple years, and I even look at my early films. I even threw one on that I did when I was 13.
Oh my God!
So I've shot each film is shot on something different. There's Super 8, 16, 35, and high def. Like, and even like the one on Beta SP. Yeah, so you could see the progression of the technology as I was shooting. And but that's something I miss and I want to get back into, and whether it's another short or if we just go right to feature that, you know, we'll all probably work on together that we've been talking about.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah.
So, you know, no spoiler alerts, yeah, we're hoping to put some stuff together.
Am I not allowed to mention the name of this?
Or? No, it's on IMDb.
So this is Asylum.
Yes.
Asylum.
Yeah.
But we're looking for financing.
Yes.
As always, the start of every...
Isn't that weird? How, you know, filmmakers looking for financing? I've never heard of that before.
Well, I don't know. I got to think that if you get a million hits and you get a headline in the club,
yeah,
technically,
exactly.
There's got to be a new financing.
The good news is, again, with the technology model, is you need less to shoot now. You know,
right.
You don't need 1.4 million anymore. You know, the other thing that helps, too,
even
is because...
Even with 35, I mean, you were saying, you know, like 35.
Sure.
It's like there are, you know, I talk to all these people all the time. I mean, I'm beginning to think we can go back to start shooting films on 35 even cheaper now than we can on high def.
Because there's so many...
Because nobody's using it.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's demand.
They're giving
it's
film
demand.
Away.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, is there's film prints are gone. There's no film print. There's no negative cutting in film prints.
Right.
That was a huge expense for movies before.
Yeah, right.
In fact, for that one 35mm film, Hit Clown, I actually have a film print of it. Because to qualify for Academy Award screening, actually it needed a film print to show. It showed at the Lemley to qualify for Academy Awards.
You had to strike a print?
Yeah, yeah.
Out of your own pocket? That's the most expensive part.
It was the most expensive part. But keep in mind, too, film festivals, you couldn't screen unless you had a film print.
Really?
You know, this was not too many years ago. And then finally they're like, okay, digital is okay. And then all of a sudden it's like, all right, well, it doesn't even need to touch film and we'll program it. But
right.
The bigger festivals, Sundance, Slam Dance, you know, you needed a film print.
Wow.
Just to screen. So, but those days are over.
Thankfully.
And it's not like it was 20 years ago. It was, you know, it was
know,
only like...
It's not like grandpa's.
Yeah, it wasn't that
YouTube
long
thing?
Ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, I can't
well,
wait.
I saw, you know, we talked about it last week. I saw True Grit, and I'm sure I've seen this credit many times, but it never really registered, you know, because the music, the Carter Burwell score in the Coen Brothers is always enough to make you want to stay in the credits anyway, even if you're not. And so I'm reading it, and there's this whole, you know, in the crawl, what we call a title card to itself, where it takes up this big, and it says edited on Final Cut Pro.
Oh, that's a new credit.
And I said, it was nice knowing you, Avid.
Right. Because that was either a some kind of deal.
Yeah.
With that, there's no question. Software free or something. Credit. Yeah, yeah. So,
wow.
And that's to get Final Cut into more hands, obviously. And it's the choice of indie filmmakers. No indie filmmaker is doing Avid over Final Cut on their laptop.
Not but is it a choice? Is it a choice or is it... Really, you'd be stupid not to.
Right,
it kind of just takes the choice out of it.
Yeah, it really does. It's smart on Apple's part, that's for sure. And it's dumb on Avid's part. I mean, you got to compete. You know, quit being a snob about it.
Yeah.
You know, you're losing more and more of the market share. I mean, indie filmmakers is going to become, if it isn't already, a larger market share than the studios.
Yeah, and if they don't know Avid or if they haven't grown up on Avid, then you know, the software is just going to go
And I was, when I went through film school, of course, we were cutting on film.
Yeah.
And
did you have the razor blade and the block?
Oh, sure.
Look at that. Look at that.
I cut a film on an upright moviola. And,
yeah, yeah.
So
the high-tech device in the editing room, was a Steenbeck.
Oh, yeah. We would use Steenbecks. But thank God. Thank God. I mean, that's one of the reasons that the quality of films and television is sometimes questionable in terms of the editing and the pacing, is I'm convinced, because I know this, actually, that back when you were cutting on film, you were given a lot more time.
Sure.
Now, because the process is so streamlined and is so much faster, well, you know, I, as a bean counter, am figuring out, okay, if it's 80% faster, you know, we'll cut out 80% of the time.
Especially on TV, reality and stuff.
The problem, of course, with editing and cutting it all out is that an important part of it is being able to
review and thoughtfully.
Right. But you can always cut something faster. You can always do that.
Sure. Yeah.
And so what you end up with in television and even in film are these stories that have no arc in terms of their tone and pacing.
No, they're uneven.
They're unremitting.
Right.
From beginning to end.
Yeah.
And so it was like, and then the other thing about it, thank God learning on film, is you really learn what you're doing. You learn shortcuts. You learn to know what you're seeing. I'll still go
when you're shooting too.
Yeah.
I'll go into an Avid editorial session, you know, or whatever, and I'll sit down and immediately I'll say, okay, you need to trim 4 frames from that.
Right.
And they'll trim 8 and 16 and 12 and 2, and then they'll come back to me 15 minutes later and go, it was exactly 4. How did you know that on the first view? And I said, because I spent 12 hours trying to get one particular splice
right
on an upright moviola.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm never and I never wanted to go through that again.
Right. So and you never have to.
And you never have to. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Boy, we do sound like grandpas on these.
We have a lot of film students who listen to us, and also filmmakers who listen to us. And I'm always surprised by sometimes, like, you know, the questions we'll get. Like one guy asked, like he emailed us, "Hey, can you help me get an agent?" And I sent this long email back, and I said, first of all, because he said, the only thing I'm missing for my career is an agent. I said, first of all, that's the last thing you should be thinking about an agent. You need an audience first, and then the agents will find you, and then by then you won't need them.
Exactly. Right.
So the agents like are eating each other at this point. I mean, they're getting fired and stuff. The agents are getting less and less of the equation.
Yeah.
So the other one, too, is people are always surprised when I recommend a reading list to them, people that want to be filmmakers.
Exactly.
It's like, well, would you just show up in an operating room without reading a medical book? You know, it's film's an art form, but still it's a skill and a technique, and you got to learn the language of film if you want to be a filmmaker.
Yeah.
And I always recommend, what I'll do is, like, you want to know what to watch, here's the plays you should go watch. And here's the sculptors that you should study.
Right.
And here's the paintings. You know, when I'm discussing things with a cinematographer, we're always discussing paintings.
Right. Because it's composition.
It's painting with light.
And light.
Right.
And it's not just from the standpoint of you also need it, but you also need to know where film came from and how it is different and how it's similar to other visual storytelling forms.
Right.
But we all see the result of filmmakers who are educated in film alone.
Yeah.
Rather than it's interesting though that we started with books and we're back to
books.
The lesson here is read a book, everybody. That's right. As Groucho Marx said, yes. I find television very educational because whenever it's on, I go in another room and read a book. That's right.
But you guys have probably read these books: Robert McKee, Story,
yes.
Sure. Understanding Movies,
yes,
and The Hero's Journey.
Of course,
is Joseph Campbell. Right. Have so those are the three
Joseph
I actually
Campbell.
Recommend.
Oh
to people.
Yeah, yeah.
Joseph
okay,
Campbell.
I did have read.
Those are the three I recommend, and I also say, look, they're like textbooks; they're very hard to get through. But if
yes.
you can get through them, it'll tell you pretty much your entire basis for filmmaking.
Wow. Well, that's very good. And so now with Asylum,
mm-hmm.
Goal for financing?
Yes, it's the same old story. We had all these attachments, you know, financing fell out, and now it's out again. And but
start square one.
But it's interesting. It's still got a couple of interesting attachments, like you know, other than Dean Haglund, there's
hello.
There's a developer in the UK that will make the video game with the tie-in, and
right.
we've already created that proposal, and that's done. That's ready to go with the financing. At one point, I had the video game company and Stan Winston together before he passed away, figuring out how to get this movie produced and share art assets for the game and for the movie. It got really far. We got really close to making this movie, but then you know everything. One thing after another kind of fell out of place.
Right, and when that collapses, it's...
Yeah, but it's made to be low budget. You know, Asylum, for those of you that haven't read the IMDb page, is it's about a SWAT team that is called into an insane asylum to investigate demonic possession. So it's
that sounds fabulous.
Yeah,
it's got action.
I think I did the behind the scenes right. documentary for that at New Image.
No.
In Bulgaria.
Yeah. No.
We could.
To Bulgaria.
Ron Perlman was
yeah.
it? Oh, wait, that was rats. So, I'm sorry.
What?
Yeah. It was a demonic possession of rats in an insane asylum.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And then
Ron Perlman ran the insane asylum.
Why wouldn't he?
And then a SWAT team comes in?
I'm sure at some point.
So that's what we're looking at. We're looking to get financing again. But like I said, you know, we're all working on it right now. We might coming to a DVD store near you, if they exist, in the next couple of years.
Or a whole new theatrical
model.
And also,
model, yes.
because we've already established that time is not linear, by today,
right, it
by
could
the
be
time
done.
We're doing this, you
yes.
might already have
yes.
it.
Yes, we start now.
Yeah, it might be in your brain at this point.
You've already injected the movie in your head, and you've enjoyed it.
You know, we keep mentioning the Comedy Film Nerds website.
Yes.
Who are the film nerds?
The Comedy Film Nerds.
Is it just you?
I founded the site with Graham Elwood, another comedian and filmmaker, and
right.
we created it for a place for comedians and filmmakers to come together, but mainly for comedians also to talk about movies. So we've got a bunch of different writers that all have their own take and style, including Dean Haglund.
Hello.
They write movie reviews, they guest on the podcast, and we also have a fully functional store where you can find books, CDs, DVDs, and even downloads for short films.
Look at that.
In fact, Hit Clown is available for download for $1.99.
That's it?
Yep, that's it.
Look at that.
So it's really, we've been around for about 3 years. The first year no one noticed, and mainly because we had a completely unnavigable website. And we went through a revision and a rebuild, and then we added the podcast. And this last year we've really been expanding and growing.
And now you do something interesting for your podcast that we should think about, because you go and you know your analytics really well.
Yes.
Yeah,
we know who's listening, what, how many downloads, and what cities and what countries that the downloads are coming from. And we know the clients, too, what they're listening on, iTunes or whatever.
How do you get your iTunes numbers, though? We never get those because iTunes doesn't release the analytics.
Well, no, those they don't. But if you're hosting, like we use Libsyn, and then they tell me how many people listened in iTunes, how many people listened on a Zune, how many people listened in, you know, whatever device they're using.
Wow, that's crazy.
And
I'm sorry, who gives you the number?
Libsyn.
And what is Libsyn?
Libsyn is a hosting company, and
it's a hosting company.
They also built our apps for us. You know, for iTunes and Droid, they built apps for us, and then we split the revenue.
And see, of course, we're on Farpoint Media,
right?
Who we love.
We love, but they don't give us a lot of info.
No,
we,
and it was significant when we were on a different host before their new host. Remember how our numbers suddenly dropped by like 99%?
Yeah, that was odd.
We went from the last one, 5,800 downloads on the last one. Oh, this one not so good. 170.
It was that when they were about to pay you. That usually happens. Numbers drop when they're about to pay.
Really tough. And of course, people listen to us in other areas. They listen to us in Jackalope and Jackalope Radio. Mm-hmm. Do we get numbers from Jackalope Radio?
Yeah, we're about to.
Yeah, that's good to know.
For the end of the year.
So any day now, you know.
But you pay $40 a year for that.
$20 a month.
$20
a month. We're on the pro plan, and then
but you get all these other services.
You get all the services, and they also helped us find advertising. We actually made far more than that from Libsyn than we paid them.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. We made money on advertising, and we had an advertiser come on board for a couple months, and then we split the revenue from the apps, and it's more than paid for it.
Hmm. So maybe in the new year, one of our resolutions
switch hosting.
Switch hosting.
And right now, you could probably charge Libsyn for this little advertisement we just gave them.
Hello. Where are they located? Are they're Australian, right? Or
I don't think so. No, I mean, the guys we deal with are in this country, but who knows? You know, back end and all that stuff
totally,
is.
Yeah. It's geographically irrelevant, as they say.
Yeah, I mean, we use the same shopping cart. You know, we use X.
And I always favored
that is.
I always favored Libsyn over Chapstick because
Chapstick is the hosting's not as good.
That's right. I have to share.
Yeah.
Ew, gross. Just not right. Oh my God.
So, but podcasting is a whole new world, man. I mean, it used to be, you know, you had to go on the road, knock on doors, you know, really just to grow your following. Now you can do it from, you know, your home.
Yeah.
You can grow your following. We've seen it as our numbers for the podcast have increased, hits on the website increased, and sales have increased. People have really been, so I have to say, if there's any other Comedy Film Nerds fans listening or new ones, they've been really supportive on buying the buying stuff in the store, especially chill packs.
Love that.
Well,
that's,
you know,
right.
When we were traveling the world shooting our documentary, The Truth Is Out There.
Speaking.
Which people can find the latest about it, truth-is-out-there.com.
Just
chips off the tongue easily. Or facebook.com/truthmovie. But truth when we were traveling around
the
world.
Oh, you have a fan page now?
Yep.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, someone, come be a liker.
Should I like it?
Please.
Be a liker. Yeah. Be a liker. We know you have many choices of what to like.
Right.
We would like to thank you for liking
it. I haven't seen it yet, but I already like it.
The trailer's out. The trailer's
oh, is
out.
It?
Yeah, on the YouTube.
Oh,
there.
Cool.
But somebody
does it have
asked
a million
us.
Views?
Getting there.
Yeah. Getting there. Very good. Our trailer is about to headline at a comedy club.
You could do it.
Not me, just the trailer.
But someone asked me after one of, you know, when we would travel, we would do the, you know, we would go to events and we'd do our interviews and, you know, and you try to hit different things at one time. But we'd always have to make sure that we had a show each week because we've been on every week for going on 4 years now.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Wow, really?
And
we predate Comedy Film Nerds.
Oh yeah, we just did one. We just celebrated our 1 year anniversary. Oh,
yeah, right. Our fourth year will be I guess in May, beginning of May. We celebrate 4 years. But so every week we bring a, you know, a brand new hour of
hilarious
chill packery,
internet tasty podcasty goodness.
Yeah,
changing the way you listen to the internet since 2007. But the point is, somebody asked, like, do you? They came to the, so we did a live one. We did a, you know, we like doing some of these live podcasts before audiences.
Sure, sure.
Instead of a Q&A, we'll do a podcast, which is a Q&A.
And
just recorded.
Yeah.
But somebody said, so do you actually make movies to grow your podcast audience? Because we'd thought that we were doing a podcast to grow our movie audience. But because I guess we seem to have so much joy in doing the show and in talking to people and in afterwards talking to them and answering the questions on them, somebody just like, and they were earnest. They weren't trying to be clever.
Yeah.
They really thought.
It's actually a valid question.
And it's sort of I don't know. The answer is I don't know. I don't, and I don't know if it matters one way or another. It's like,
here's the great thing: it doesn't.
It you does know, not matter.
An audience is an audience, whether you get them through a movie or through a podcast. If they like you, they will seek you out.
Right.
Like, you know, I've sold more books on, you know, being a new dad from doing the Comedy Film Nerds podcast. If they like you, they like you, and they'll support you.
Right.
So, and that's again the great thing about what we're doing is, you know, they like the movie, they're going to come to the podcast. They like the podcast, they're going to buy your movie. It doesn't matter.
Right.
It's, you know, they like you.
Aww.
I think they like you. Yes, they do.
Yeah. Well, and you know, let's face it, everybody has such a limitation on their time and their money, and the world's getting faster and faster. But if you find people who you know are not actually trying to exploit you, right. as opposed to companies that are always seeking to exploit
sure.
everyone, because that's the nature of business.
Yeah. You're going right to your audience. There's no like, there's no gatekeepers. You're not like, oh, I wish I could, you know, get to Paramount so I could distribute my film. No, people will buy your film right from your website.
And this was the thing, and I said this a couple of weeks ago on the show, that I used to travel to film festivals, you know, used to do all that sort of stuff, thinking that, you know, if I do this so that I can promote the movie, so that I can sell the movie, and I do all that so that I can get to make another movie.
Right.
And some point a few years ago, I realized, no, you know what? I make the movies so that I can travel around and meet people and hear their stories and share my stories with them, because that's actually a really fun way to live my life. And it was a very powerful moment
for me to realize
mm-hmm. that, no, I'd been saying I'm doing all this so that I can reach that. No, this is actually what I want.
The old saying, happiness is not a destination. It's a manner of traveling.
Aww. Mm-hmm. Wow.
I'm going to drop a little wisdom on you.
Look at that.
For the holiday season.
was that
in your book?
Yeah, that wasn't.
I think
that would have been plagiarism. I would have had to attribute that to somebody.
I also think that that's actually just so succinct that the freaked out dad to be might have read that and go, oh, fuck you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's too contrived.
Yeah,
you don't know what I'm going through. Jerk.
I didn't think this would be Eat, Pray, Love, too.
For guys.
For guys.
Eat, Pray, Dude.
Eat, Pray, Dude. Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
So is there anything else we should let
covered everything?
Chilpak audience
I think we're doing numbers? Pretty well. I mean, keep going to Comedy Film Nerds. You can pick up a Chilpak or read some of Dean's fantastic reviews. The other thing Dean does that we love is not only he'll review a movie, occasionally he'll do like a column on the state of a certain type of movie, which is fantastic. He's definitely... Right.
The genre.
Yeah, the genre.
The genre as it stands now.
Yes. And always the thing about Dean is that what we love is always a little insider information. We actually got some nice emails and compliments. They love when you're on because you give them some insider stuff along with being funny.
Oh, so, is that right?
What there
did,
you go.
What did I divulge? I don't know. They'll have to listen. I don't even know what the hell I talk about.
But no, that's. I think we've pretty much covered it.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming by.
Oh, my pleasure.
Have a happy holiday.
You too, guys.
Merry what you who's it. Whatever the Kwanzaa, the triple, I don't know. What a boot. Celebrate.
Doing it all.
What do Buddhists have a traditional Christmas time solstice?
I don't know. I just know that I am honoring the Tet ceasefire.
Christmas Tet ceasefire.
You know what was bad was I started that sentence. Could you tell that I started that sentence without having any idea where I was going?
Yeah, exactly. And then you end up with a 1972 Vietnam reference.
Actually, no. I thought it was like, oh, this is going to be something good. That's a pregnant pause. I know. Yeah, he's building dramatic tension.
For the Tet.
Was pregnant pause a chapter title?
It was. And then false labor. Yeah.
I think somehow my last joke falls into the latter. Head.
A lot of labor.
I'm Phil Lernis.
And I'm Dean Haglund. Of course, you can catch every episode of Chilpak Hollywood.
At ChilpakHollywood.com.
Yes, and you can come see us on Facebook.
Facebook.com/ChilpakHollywood.
Mm-hmm.
You can be a fan on MySpace.
You can now.
We are there. No, you've always been there.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah. Even when we heard the winds whipping through
back in the
MySpace.
80s. Yeah, exactly.
The tumbleweeds going by our page. You can always find the most recent episode and a blog previewing the next week's episode.
Why don't we do that?
MySpace.com/ChillPackHollywood.
Follow me on Twitter all across Canada.
Are you going to tweet along?
I'm going to tweet probably one or two times as I freeze to death and my vehicle's in this ditch waiting for somebody to tow me up. No, I hope that doesn't happen.
Why, did you just have a vision?
I did. I foresaw where I am right now.
No, that's how they celebrate Christmas in Canada.
I'm in the ditch and freeze. Yeah,
that's very Canadian.
Very Canadian.
Twitter.com/DHagland. Yeah. I'm Twitter.com/PhilLairness. And Chris.
I am Myopic Prod for Myopic Productions.
Myopic Prod.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that sounds painful.
But somebody had already had my name. I couldn't use my name.
Are you kidding?
No, I tried my name first. I'm like, oh, this is going to confuse people. So
I saw there was four other Chris Mancini.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, let's...
Do you know those guys?
I don't. No.
Have you emailed them going, change your name?
Not until tomorrow. That's a good idea. I didn't think of that.
Brand confusion.
Yeah.
Exactly. Totally cyber squatters.
Yeah.
Anyway, till...
We know a talk show host that can recommend a lawyer to you about brand confusion.
That's right. We got his letter.
Because, yeah, not all 4 years of Chilpack Hollywood Hour were we actually called Chilpack Hollywood
Hour. Was Wink Martindale pissed off at somebody?
No. Some other... I'll tell you the whole story.
Yeah. Right now, we're fading under
the
music.
Yeah, exactly. La, la, la. So, till next time, I'm Dean Haglund.
Phil Lairness.
Da, 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 da.